Amongst the standout figures of 20th century Christianity, Thomas Merton has achieved iconic status. By the mid-1960s, he had become a kind of universal human being, deeply at home in the Western Christian spiritual tradition, but equally able to hold his own with Zen masters, Taoist priests, and Hindu mystics. If ever a man lived in words, it was him. In a flood of brilliant talk and in a stream of perceptive books, his insatiable intellectual curiosity and spiritual insight opened doors of understanding for people across the world. From that small hermitage in the woods around the monastery in Kentucky, there flowed a stream of communicating energy in which he both deeply revealed and at the same time concealed who he really was. What has only come to light in recent years is that the final spiritual breakthrough of his life occurred as a result of an affair he had with a nurse. Admitted to hospital for a routine operation to clear up a long-standing health problem, he had frequent cordial conversations with a young Catholic nurse who was assigned to look after him. On returning to the monastery, he found that the well of bereft feelings he fell into indicated that perhaps he was in love with her. Using all his limited opportunities for contact, he initiated a series of meetings. Despite living in an enclosed order, he had privileges relating to the fame he had brought the monastery as an internationally known writer. Friends were embarrassed to find that the picnics they had been asked to set up were in fact opportunities for him to be alone with the nurse. The evidence suggests that he broke his vow of celibacy. Of course, in a highly controlled environment such as his community, it was not long before he was found out, in this case by the brother who ran the telephone switchboard. As he had done before, Merton's abbot showed a sure touch in handling their high-maintenance star. Over a series of volatile meetings, he gently but firmly brought Merton back into contact with the moorings of his vocational fidelity. At the time, one of the brothers was puzzled by a scene he had witnessed in which Merton slammed the abbot's door and shouted, "If there's a child, we'll name him after you." Later, coming to terms with his grieving, Merton recognized that as a result of this episode, a wound had closed within him. The early death of his American mother and later his New Zealand father had left him feeling like a lost, lonely, abandoned little boy. He had spent most of his life in all-male institutional living in boarding schools and a monastery. His gift for friendship had an uncertain, doubting question mark behind it. Had he beguiled people into liking him with the brilliant talk, the wide interests, and the intellectual firepower? Was he a stunted, maimed human being who had run away into a monastery because he was incapable of loving? Finally, someone from outside his professional and admiration circle had looked deep inside him, had considered his vulnerability, and had decided to love him. He was now free to accept himself as a worthwhile child of God. If the greats of the Christian world get themselves into tangles like this in matters of sexual desire and human loving, then what hope is there for us? Why has God thrown this stick of dynamite into humankind's affairs with all its capacity to raise us to the heights of delight and to cast us down into the depths of misery? Amongst all the animals on the face of this planet, we have the unusual feature that our offspring take a long time to grow to maturity, to the point where they are capable of looking after themselves. They need long years of looking after in their vulnerable emerging stage. A strong sexual bond is evolutionary biology's way of motivating the parents to put in the long, hard years of slog to do this well. Stability, predictability, and reliability, this is what children need above all. If the parents delight in each other, that is more likely to be provided, even if babies who cry through the night are powerful anti-aphrodisial agents. Beyond the business of throwing our DNA into the future, Eros affects each one of us as a powerful inner impulse that drives us to be involved in the lives of others. Caution, self-interest, the instinct for self-preservation. There is every reason why we should stay locked up in ourselves, pursuing a keep-it-simple agenda. But God has planted this outward radiating energy within us that makes us cast caution aside and take risks as we are drawn to other people we are attracted to. The dynamics of attraction are far wider than just the people we go to bed with and function within just about every significant relationship we are involved in. But they also lead us into the complicated messes we often end up in as a result of the search for love. You are right to say, "I have no husband, for although you have had five, the one you have now is not your husband." You spoke the truth there. Prophets were expected to be able to read the secrets of people's hearts. It was a mark of their authenticity. Jesus presents himself this morning as the one who knows the secrets of our intimate lives. At one level, he is making a point about one of God's wise rules that protects us from folly and heartbreak. I put it more directly in a pamphlet that was sent to couples in my last parish who were thinking of getting married at the parish church. I quote from it now. "Holy Trinity marries couples that have been living together. However, the Anglican Church remains unimpressed by the argument that you can find out if someone has good marriage material by taking them for a road test. Longitudinal studies in Britain have shown that couples who live together are more likely to experience later marriage failure." But at a deeper level, Jesus has an invitation for every one of us this morning, no matter what our state of life, married, single by choice, or by circumstances not of our choosing, to get real and honest with God about the secrets of our intimate lives, reviewing the past with unflinching candor and discerning insight. Here is a Lenten task that the people we are close to will thank us for undertaking. Perhaps our prayer might be, "Jesus, I want to be healed of everything in me that holds me back from loving people well." And we might like to use some of the lines from one of this morning's hymns to help us get close to the mind of God in these matters. "Dear Lord and Father of mankind, forgive our foolish ways, reclothe us in our rightful mind, in purer lives thy service find. Breathe through the heats of our desires, thy coolness and thy balm." Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.